So if you remember, if you were reading my various internet activities here on WBJC.com, I talked about having a friend listen to some new classical music who had not actually been too experienced with classical music in the past. And via Google Hangouts, I do have that friend in the studio with me today. This is Alex Wiederspiel. He is a former colleague of mine at my college radio station called U92 at West Virginia University. He is now the faculty advisor for that station, and he is also the news director of WAJR. Welcome into the studios of WBJC.
Thank you, John.
So the pieces I had you listen to, they were, if I'm remembering correctly, and I could be looking at the playlist that I sent you to help myself out here, it was John Adams' Absolute Jest, Caroline Shaw's Partita for Eight Voices, Max Richter's recomposition of Vivaldi's Four Seasons, Jennifer Higdon's Viola Concerto, and Kevin Putz's Four Airs. And these Four Airs, they were for various instruments with piano, so the chamber work of the lot. So, since the new series is called First Impression, Alex, what were your first impressions of the works?
Well, I can start with Adams, I think, since he's not the freshest in my mind, but I remember hearing enough of him that I took a lot of notes. My first thought was energetic, frenetic, how classical music is, I guess, kind of supposed to sound to an untrained ear. But the other thing that I thought to myself was, how has nobody convinced this guy to score a film yet? If you listen to his work, it would work just about very well in anything Hollywood has done. He could be a very rich man. Maybe he doesn't want to sell out, but, or maybe he's just hasn't been asked and no one has figured out to ask him yet. But that was sort of my first thought, was I could totally hear scoring a major Hollywood film.
You know, actually, the Washington Post music critic, Anne Majette, had just released, it was a few days ago. We're recording this on January the 20th. A few days ago, she released a review of a concert she had gone to of music from films that John Williams had scored. And she had written about this sort of, one would say in the classical music community, perhaps a refreshing perspective on how film music has been seen as sort of beneath classical music. You're talking about John Adams not wanting to sell out for anything. I'm currently Googling right now if John Adams has composed any film score.
I don't think he has. I was looking through his Wikipedia while I was listening to him. I'm pretty sure he might have done some stage stuff. I don't think he's ever scored a film, though, which was I thought was interesting, because that was the most jarring part. You could hear it in major epics of late, Star Trek, and it's escaping the new Star Trek films. It's escaping me who scored those, but I thought his score was excellent in those. And obviously John Williams is sort of the first name that always comes to mind.
Talking about the new Star Trek films, by the way, John Adams has composed for some films. He contributed to the Call Me By Your Name score and then four other movies that I haven't heard of, but,
okay.
The new Star Trek films, there is one thing in it. I forget if it was Into Darkness or a different one. I think it was the most recent one, but there is a line in there that just irks me to no end. And it's when this one character decides to, she's like, oh, I know how to disrupt these guys' communications. And she starts just blasting the Beastie Boys. And Bones is just like, is this classical music? And I'm just thinking, no, it's not classical music. Classical music is not defined by how old music is. Classical is a style of music. And that's just something that I want to try to put into the conversation about classical music, is that it's not about how old the music is. It's a style of music, as you have found out by listening to classical music that has been composed within the past 10 years. Now, granted, one of them was a sort of recomposition of a piece that is over 200 years old. That's third on the playlist. Now, I put Caroline Shaw right after John Adams, and I'm curious as to what you thought of what kind of, I told you that was going to be kind of a left, kind of like a hard left turn there.
It was jarring in that, obviously, as someone who is not completely accustomed to classical music. It's not it's not in my repertoire of what I'm listening to daily. So I don't know Caroline Shaw, but it was definitely, it was a hard left turn from what I was hearing with John Adams, which was kind of what I was expecting to hear. And then with Shaw, it was absolutely not what I was expecting. Not that I didn't like it. I actually quite enjoyed it. And I debated with myself back and forth whether I had a bigger connection with Shaw's work after it was over than I did with Adams, because Adams felt almost, played out is the wrong term, but it was, Shaw's work was so not what I was expecting that it kind of stuck with me more than Adams did, actually.
So John Adams actually, in the earlier parts of his career, he was composing music that could be seen as a similar kind of music to Philip Glass. You ever heard of Philip Glass?
I'm aware of his existence. I couldn't tell you anything about him.
So Philip Glass is a composer. He's actually from Baltimore. He is known for what people call minimalist composition. And there's sort of a joke about it. It's called Knock Knock.
Who's there?
Philip Glass.
Philip Glass who?
Knock Knock.
Who's there?
Philip Glass.
Are we going to keep, is this like Pete and repeat?
Yes, that is essentially what minimalist music is about. I remember when I was still at U92, there was a band called Swans, and I was talking about this band as kind of a combination of heavy metal music and Philip Glass, because they use repetition and subtle changes to build tension. And Philip Glass does the same thing in his music. His music is very slow developing, and it often just feels like you're listening to the same thing over and over again, and you really have to listen in, like, deeper into the music to sort of pull out what the structure is, because the structure is this gigantic thing composed of these smaller repeating parts. And so John Adams' earlier work was kind of in that vein.
There's not a lot I can add in that, other than I thought Shaw was something that here's sort of the big takeaway, if I could add this. When Shaw ended, I thought to myself, if there was one of these between Shaw and Adams, what I just listened to, which one would I immediately put on again? It actually would have been Shaw.
Yeah.
Because it was so new and different compared to what I had actually heard from classicals, from what you had played for me in the past and what my expectations about classical music is.
And you know what? I like that. I like that a lot, because that, I mean, that tells me that something that sounds, I mean, you put something in front of somebody, you tell them this is classical music, and that it sounds nothing like classical music, but the composer put this together in the classical style, and then it comes out sounding like something completely different from what people understood to be classical music. And I mean, there were composers in the past who did that. I mean, Beethoven completely upended the idea of how classical music is structured by using more emotional aspects of the music to be more tonally adventurous than the classical period, which is the two, of course, two towers of that were Mozart and Haydn. And their music is theoretically perfect. That was kind of like the refined part of Baroque music, kind of Baroque music stripped down to its essentials, and that became the classical period, which is the shortest period in classical music. And then the Romantic era, which took up the 19th century, and you could count perhaps the very early 20th century, but generally it's used to describe the 19th century, is where more emotion was brought into the music and more textural, timbral factors were brought into how music was composed. And then you have Wagner composing Tristan und Isolde, which the overture was a demonstration of how tonality could be addressed in never resolving a chord until the very end of a four-hour opera.
Speaking of, you used the term adventurous in there. Have you told your listeners why I was willing to be so adventurous in listening to something that I have literally no background with?
Well, I haven't. This is actually just for the website, so I haven't really talked about this sort of program on the air.
So I think that there's a lesson here to be learned, and I know that this probably won't be true for many of your listeners, but I have decided this year, my New Year's resolution, the reason I agreed to sort of be your guinea pig, is that I felt kind of in a bubble in terms of the media that I've been consuming, and far too willing to repeat listening, repeat, watching, repeat, reading of different forms of media, but never expanding beyond my bubble. So I decided this year I was going to consume one new piece of media every day. And that's actually, so for Friday and for Saturday was your playlist. I'm going to count John Adams as my Friday and then Shaw and Richter as my Saturday. And I'm looking forward to kind of letting people know that, because I have my own means of putting out there that I'm currently consuming, but I'm really looking forward to letting people know, by the way, I really took a step outside the box, and listened to music that I would not seek out normally under any circumstances, but that's the whole point of what I'm doing. And I would encourage anyone who may have more in common with me than with John to do what I'm doing now. Go step outside the box, listen to this station for 30 minutes, for an hour, and listen to John for an hour and see if you find music that you might connect with.
And the thing is that the music we play on the station, on the air, is generally mostly standard repertoire. But the thing is that if you think about how American pop music is, or rock music, or even metal music, it's all, I mean, you hear the joke, it's all just four chords. And even the most standard of standard classical repertoire just does so much more than that. And that's one of the things that is what I love about classical music, is that it can be just, it can do so many things with such a simple palette. I mean, especially if you look at the classical period, it's such a simple, relatively simple kind of classical music, and yet one can do so much with that kind of just small palette and set of rules, because that was really the height of using music theory to make the music happen, and only the best composers like Mozart and Haydn of that era were able to have music that lasted as long as it did. I mean, there are plenty of others in the classical period that are still in the repertoire, but of course, like I said, the two towers, Mozart and Haydn.
I'll have to, I know a little Mozart, not much, but I will consider, and more than consider, I will keep some classical composers on my list as I go through this. I have to do this for an entire year. That's my commitment.
Yeah.
So I'll keep some classical composers on my list so that I can expand my horizons just a little bit. Cause that's the goal here, is that I do feel after listening to this playlist and first impressions. But the thing is, John, I'm going to go back. I'm going to listen to a couple of these more than once. In particular, the next one on the playlist, I will admit, is more palatable because I have more
familiarity with it.
Even if I don't know, I don't know where exactly I picked it up from, other than being potentially driving with you. But I know there are other places, because the music was so familiar to me that I know there are other places I had to have picked it up.
And the reason why is that this next piece, the Richter recomposition, is basically he's taking the music from one of the most famous compositions ever, Vivaldi's Four Seasons, and just setting it to mostly the same kinds of instruments and just making the notes go in different ways while still keeping moderately true to the original. It's just a 21st century re-envisioning of this monumental piece. And as it started, I'm sure you heard the theme that is probably one of the most well-known themes in classical music. And that is the opening to Antonio Vivaldi's Spring from the Four Seasons. And actually, I think last year there was a Subway commercial that used Winter from the Four Seasons.
I recall that.
And if you listened to the original piece, you might notice that is in four, and Max Richter's version is in three. That's one of the sort of recompositions he did. He took that and made it, and just used different rhythms, used different note values to sort of give a new take on this work. So what did you think listening to Max Richter's Four Seasons?
Well, it was kind of nice amidst all of the unfamiliarity to then find some familiarity, because it certainly makes it more palatable that way. But I will say that's not the only reason that I enjoyed it as much as I did. I think that I'm someone who really likes long, comprehensive work in any form of media, whether it be In film, I am, you know, my mother always complains when I want to go see a 2-hour and 15-minute, 2-hour and 30-minute movie, and she wants to go see an 1-hour and 45-minute film. Mm-hmm. Well, I think one of the things that I really liked about this is it felt really comprehensive, really full-bodied. Richter's four seasons, at least, and I don't hesitate to use the term cover because that's what you'd use in regular pop music.
It's kind of like a cover. I mean, you have some composers who quote other composers, and this is a complete reworking of this one piece, which that makes it kind of like a cover.
Yeah. So Shaw was more of like a taste, but with Richter, with this piece, it was comprehensive, and it was, again, it was full. And I felt like I as I'm going through this entire work, and I was listening to it while at work at U92, in fact, I'm listening to this entire work, and I never got to that point where I thought to myself, when is this over? I kept thinking to myself, you know, I want more. And I kept checking, and there kept being more of this. Now, again, and that might have something to do with the fact that I had some familiarity with this already.
Of course.
But I still think that by and large, that's probably a good sign if I'm saying I don't want this to end. I don't want this to end.
That's why I picked it, because it is such, I mean, it's just a retake. It's a reworking of such a familiar piece for basically anybody who's heard music or perhaps seen a cartoon somewhere. It's a very, very familiar piece of music.